Hi, this is the AWS Podcast, and I'm Jeff Barr. Today I'm interviewing Diego Villarreal of Banter as part of the Intel Startup Spotlight. We're sitting in the basement of the AWS Loft in San Francisco. Welcome.
Thanks, Jeff. How are you?
Doing great. Tell me a bit about what Banter does.
Sure. So it's a mobile app that we launched a few months ago. You can think of it as the Waze for nightlife. And so, yes, we're a nightlife app. Yes, there's a lot of nightlife apps out there, and there have been some for quite a few years, most of them which have failed. So what are we doing differently? So we really focus on the real-time aspect of nightlife. So being able to not just, say, plan ahead what you might do this weekend, but once the night begins, you can actually start seeing photos and other real-time information being shared by people at different bars, at different nightclubs, at different restaurants. So you can avoid going to a place only to find that it's way too packed or worse, totally empty.
Ah, so when I think of Waze, I think partly of it's telling me what to do and also kind of what not to do. So it sounds like you're in a similar fashion there.
Yeah, we are. And interestingly, there's a lot of comparisons in the way we kind of operate to kind of, or at least how our platform operates to how Waze does, because we are both, we provide some of the information as a platform, but then also our users provide information. So same way Waze's algorithms will kind of track the best route for you to go to, but then as you drive, you can report a cop. Similarly, we will, through our technology that we've built, we'll provide you with a list of the coolest events going on in your city, the best bars or clubs for you to go to, but then it's up to the users to start providing the crowdsourced real-time information about whether how busy the place is or the vibe, even the gender ratio.
How did you decide to build this?
I mean, for personal reasons, really. I mean, I've lived in San Francisco for about 5 years now. I think of myself as a very social guy, outgoing guy. I like to go out, love going to live music, DJs. And it was interesting how a few years ago when I kind of started exploring with this idea, it was just ridiculous how often my friends and I, having lived here in North Beach in San Francisco for a few years at that point, it was kind of a shot in the dark of what or of where to go to on a given Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, because even though we knew the bars in the neighborhood or the best bars in San Francisco, whether it was going to be good on a given night was just totally luck. So we built it out of just personal reasons, and it's been a very fun ride.
So to me, the challenge with any kind of a social app like this is getting to critical mass. How do you approach that?
Yeah, so we've avoided kind of the traditional chicken and egg problem by not relying purely on crowdsourced content. So if, for example, all we did was just give you photos being shared by people at bars, yes, that would be very difficult to actually grow because a user would open up the app early on, they would see very little content, and it just wouldn't provide any value. Which is why we first started by being, more than anything, a discovery platform in that you open up the app in a new city, once we launched there, and even if there's no users in that city, you're able to still see all the happy hours going on that day, all the different DJs playing that day, the comedy shows, the live music, and so people begin to use the app for those reasons, and then as we grow the user base in that specific city, they begin to interact with each other, they begin to share crowdsourced information with each other. So through that, we've been able to kind of avoid this traditional chicken and egg problem.
Okay, so you've effectively bootstrapped it with some other information.
Correct, exactly.
So it doesn't start it empty.
Correct, exactly, yeah. And that was on purpose, I mean, because we realized that otherwise we would face a very big chicken and egg problem that we know is the reason why a lot of similar applications have failed.
So you get this up and running, you launch it on a city-by-city basis?
We started first half of this year. We were kind of in a pilot phase. We were live on the app stores, but kind of still very much learning and going from the first reverse version to a much more complete version. And we at that point had focused mainly just in San Francisco and really downtown San Francisco. Then we began working and making our technology significantly much more scalable. We began partnering with other platforms that say sell tickets or that allow you to say reserve a table at a club. And through these partnerships and just through the technology that we built, we're actually very scalable. So it's we've been kind of launching in different cities slowly. We launched in 8 more cities over the course of the summer. But actually now very recently we're able to just expand our content, and you can download and use Banter now in about 50 cities in the US. Granted, the majority of our activity and our users are in San Francisco, New York, and Boston. But if you open up the app in Tucson, Arizona, you'll find 5 or 6 different events going on that night, and you'll see if there's other people using the app, you'll begin to see that crowdsourced content too.
Do the venue owners publish their own information?
Nope. No. And so that's actually one of the ways we've been able to grow so quickly, because our technology and the way we've built the app does not rely on us establishing any relationship whatsoever with a specific business owner. So we do a bunch of web scraping through some of the kind of tools that we built. We integrate with other platforms that kind of have calendars of different shows and different events going on at hundreds of venues. And then other platforms that allow us to basically let people reserve tables at these clubs. So we're kind of a middleman. Think of us kind of like even a kayak, I guess, for all the different nightlife stuff you could do.
I know your website mentioned food trucks, which is kind of a personal interest of mine, because around Seattle, the same truck is in a different location every day. And you can never, without wandering through the entire neighborhood, you never get a good sense of what the menus all consist of.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we've when we launched, we actually were focusing, we launched about 9 months ago, so it's been a very, we've evolved the first version to what it is now significantly. The first version, we showed on a map, kind of like Waze does, different icons for different things, and we showed live music, happy hours, and food trucks. And why these three things? Why did we start with these three? Mainly because we found that it was things that people did frequently, and it was information that you couldn't find on, say, Google Maps or on Yelp because they change on a daily basis. So say this bar, a bar will never change, obviously, its location, but whether or not they have a live band playing on a given night or who they have playing on a given night changes daily. And same thing with a food truck. I mean, you might know what food trucks might be out there, but usually they start changing location, so it's hard to actually know what food trucks there might be a 5-block radius from where you work. And so we kind of provided that information. Interestingly enough, though, we've seen that the majority of our user base really found that the live music part of it, being able to know the busyness and vibe of the bars and the clubs, was really a little bit more engaging than the food part of it. So the original happy hour content, the food truck content, that is actually, it's still there and we still provide it, but we've seen the majority of our users come back for more of the nightlife content. And it might just be happening because of the users we've been getting. They're millennials, a lot of them are college-age students. They like to party, they like to go out. And so that's really what we're seeing a lot of the focus go towards.
What's your business model or your revenue model for this?
So currently, I'm not going to say we don't have one. We do have one, but it's currently not really operating, mainly because our revenue model will just become more... It will grow as we grow, right? We'll make more money as we grow. I will say that we're not planning on monetizing, say, local business owners. We're not building a Yelp-like model or a Groupon-like model where we have local business owners, bar owners, club owners as customers, and they pay us, say, $30 a month. Our goal is to really monetize our users. I mean, our users right now, they already spend a ton of money going out to clubs and bars. We're building and designing right now a set of, a premium version of Banter that will give them access to a significantly number of very, very cool perks for a very, very low cost. And we're not saying that we're going to charge everyone. We're just going to provide some very cool benefits to the users that are willing to give us, to pay $10 a year to be a Banter VIP member. And aside from that, we are monetizing also by letting event organizers, promoters, local artists, and DJs, if they want to promote their event on Banter more prominently, and they want to, say, guarantee a minimum number of views, we kind of charge per impression. And then finally, we also get very, very small commissions and revenue kickbacks out of any ticket sold or bottle service reservation made through Banter from our partners.
Okay. Now, behind the scenes, you've got all these events, you've got these users moving around the city. Are you able to get any really interesting data out of that and learn interesting things about trends and patterns? And
yeah, so we've got a lot of data at this point. I mean, our database right now, nationwide, we probably have about 20,000 businesses now on our database. All the events we've been doing, I mean, we've been tracking for the past 6 months. Right now, we probably have about 50,000 different events that we've shown on the platform. And the good thing is it's interesting because they're not all, say, from Ticketfly. They're not all from Eventbrite. They're not all... So it's a variety of sources that we're getting from. We're basically just curating and making it all nightlife events. But there's actually very interesting data, very interesting analysis you can do around the nightlife-specific events that happen in a given city. And you can kind of track, is a certain city, do they actually really have more, say, jazz shows than DJ shows? Or which DJs are the ones that tend to have the most popularity in a given city? Or what local DJ tends to perform most often in a given city? These are really things that we're now able to do analysis on, and we're actually in the process of doing some cool just infographics, things like that we can share with our community.
So you might be able to learn things about the community that might be contrary to what people expect about the community as, like, its reputation or its vibe or something.
Exactly.
There's actually a lot more happening here than meets the eye.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe there's less.
Yeah, and I mean, what we do not do is we don't track any personal information, so we don't track, say, whether some person likes to go to a specific bar. We don't track any of that information. We generally just track more of the different vibes, the different type of nightlife that occurs in a given city. And we're able to kind of just track over time the frequency of certain type of nightlife events that happen. And interestingly enough, it's less about trying to dissect too much what happens in a specific city, but we can now very easily compare, say, how does really the nightlife in Boston compare to that of say, Chicago?
Mm-hmm. And how does it compare?
Well, so we haven't actually done a lot of the analysis. I can say I've done a little bit of analysis, mostly just in San Francisco. It was actually surprising to see how much jazz there is in San Francisco. Most of the people, kind of my age, we just go to the DJs and the clubs and stuff like that. But it's actually surprising how almost every single day there's probably five different live jazz shows you can find in a city. But I guess to answer your question, we haven't done a lot of this city to city analysis. It's something we kind of want to do, start doing now. But it's really cool, interesting stuff.
Have you been running long enough to actually see, like, seasonal effects in the data?
No, not really. I mean, we've been live for about 10 months now, but really the majority of our users began using the app, and the app began growing only about 4 months ago.
Okay. Tell me a bit about the technology behind the scenes.
Sure. So we've been, we're a small team. It's only three guys, myself included. We've developed everything in-house. We're live on both iOS and Android, and everything was done native. And then we have our back-end. I mean, we use Amazon to host basically everything. We've developed most of the scripts back. I mean, the back-end is Python. We have a little bit of Django frameworks in there. And we have our very, very big database now. But it's all hosted on Amazon, and it's been really great, kind of just the ease that the ease in how we can kind of grow. Like, we know that, yeah, I mean, the current services we're using, the current technology we've developed will allow us to scale significantly. We're not really worried about anything on that front for any, for the even mid to long term.
Is that mostly dependent on number of cities or number of venues or events or?
Well, I mean, ultimately just the amount of activity, the amount of really the calls that need to be made from the applications to the servers and because it's, I mean, we are adding certain things like being able to let users communicate within themselves, so like send each other kind of messages, chats, like as an example, if we're about to launch this update, that you'll be able to kind of communicate in this kind of forum style chat with everyone that is going to or is at the club you're going to go to tonight. And so those types of interactions are going to start stressing or going to require much, much more frequent calls to our servers. But right now, I mean, our infrastructure, I think, will definitely be able to not just necessarily deal with it as it is now, but as it grows, we can just very easily just add more bandwidth. I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's just so flexible.
Okay.
And yes, it'll cost more as we grow, but I mean, it's marginal.
What kind of strategies are you using to add users to the system?
So we have, we've evolved a little bit our go-to-market strategy in the past, I guess, 10 months since we launched, but really right now we have three main things that we're doing. One is we launched an ambassador program. We were able to recruit hundreds of ambassadors through this platform called Rocket Club, which is kind of like similar to kind of like a Kickstarter platform, but instead of, say, pre-selling a product, we actually give out a small portion of our company to all these ambassadors. So say as an ambassador, you now earn, I don't know, X amount of shares for Banter for doing X, Y, and Z tasks. So we're able to afford having hundreds of ambassadors support us without having to pay them, because we're actually incentivizing with shares of the company. And so that has allowed us to grow in a variety of communities. They help organize events. They help give out swag, etc. We've also, our partnerships, I think, are really helping us get more awareness and really stand out in ways that a lot of other apps just struggle. Because they're helping us become more than just one of many apps. Like the partnerships we're doing with these ticketing platforms, with the different bars that give out free drinks to our users, things like that actually help the users have a real life experience, because they as they use Banter, they begin to earn specials from these different bars that we partner with, or like through Banter they can now they can reserve a table at this club. And so doing things that actually impact them real time, and our partnerships have helped with that, and our partners promote Banter to their own customers and users. But really virality, I think, is really what's most important. and something that we're continuously improving on. It's not perfect yet. I mean, we're not going viral, to be honest, yet, but we're monitoring and adding very specific ways for us to be able to go viral, and that's like a lot of in-app sharing and inviting friends and sharing the photos on other social networks and things like that.
Okay. Now, do venue owners ever have a chance to, like, I know you said that you won't really monetize them or advertise them in any way, but might there be ways where they could give you, like, something exclusive that is only shared through Banter, and you could kind of test and show how well it works to spread the news?
Yes. So we're currently... So there's different things that we're doing now to actually help track both how Banter provides value to different venues, and also letting venues market themselves freely through Banter. And so an example is we're adding kind of these like both we can kind of track these like say RSVP style action that people do on Banter, saying like they're going to go to this place, and 20 people say they're going to go to this bar on Banter. That shows it. I mean, we're creating a lot of interest for that bar in Banter, right? But then on the other side is we do let we're in the process of like enabling and actually reaching out to the bars to promote that their bartenders can like upload a photo to Banter saying, hey, like right now, like this bar is like getting really busy, like it's awesome right now, and like 2-for-1 drink for the next hour. I mean, the bartenders and the bar managers, they have the flexibility to post stuff on Banter on their own. We haven't really, in the past, we didn't really push to motivate them to do that a lot because, one, we had a lot of other things to worry about, and two, because we didn't want bar owners or bar managers to put stuff on our platform that wasn't really authentic and in real time. Like, we don't want them uploading a photo from last weekend saying that it's awesome right now if, in fact, it's almost empty.
It's dead.
But there's very easy ways for us to control that, and as simple as making, like, our platform, you can now only upload a photo to Banter that you take at that moment. I mean, there's simple things like that we can do to prevent someone from uploading a photo from their library. You can actually only upload a photo to Banter that you take at that moment.
Okay.
And so that basically just guarantees if a bartender just uploaded a photo at the bar that they're working, it's happening now. I mean, that's real-time information.
Excellent. Where would you see this going over the next, like, quarters and years, do you think?
So we're in the process. I mean, we're still very early, still a very, very small team. We're actually right now in the process of raising a little bit of money to hopefully expand the team, mainly to focus a lot on more partnerships and just more growth. Really right now our focus is yes, we hope to start making money mid next year, but really our focus is our user base and really, really become as top of mind to nightlife as Waze is to traffic. I mean, we want people to know and recognize that if they want to go out and they kind of want to figure out where the best place to go to on a given night, Banter will always give them the right information and the correct information. And not only that, but we think of ourselves not as a discovery platform, but as a community. So we hope that as we grow and as we get more users, people will actually begin to interact with other users and who knows, maybe even meet up in real life because of their interaction they had on Banter. So it's like we'll be able to let you see who else is at a different club that that you're at that moment or that you might be going on to tonight. And hey, who knows, maybe the users will begin to interact with each other, try and buy each other drinks and meet up, and who knows, we'll just keep on growing from there.
Sure. Okay. What advice would you offer to other aspiring entrepreneurs?
Well, I mean, it takes time. I've been doing this, working on this idea now for 2 years, full time for 1 year, and really what we're doing now is very, very different than the version we launched 10 months ago. It's really a learning process. I'm actually glad that we launched our very first version in the state that it was, and we were able to learn and iterate on a live product as opposed to trying to spend 10 months building what we think is a perfect product that once it's out in market, we'll find all these flaws or we'll find that people don't actually want to use it or that this other competitor, because we waited so long, just launched something else quicker and we were too late. So I've definitely felt that just being out in market and iterating, it's fine. I think it was Reid Hoffman that once said that it's like if you're not ashamed of your first version of your product, you probably waited too long to launch, and I completely agree.
Hmm. Are users good at giving you feedback?
Yes. So our ambassadors give us a lot of feedback, and we also have some mechanisms inside the app that allow us to get very good feedback. So like the fifth time someone opens up the app, for example, we actually ask them a mini poll. We ask them like, hey, like, what would you like to see next on Banter? And we give them four options, like a multiple choice question. And so things like that we're building that allow us to get very good feedback to understand what we should be building next.
Okay. Out of the whole journey so far, what's been like the most interesting surprise that's come about?
Well, I mean, it's really interesting how like whenever I talk to people, especially our target users, the millennials, the college students, the recent grads, they love the idea of banter and everything that kind of we've built so far and that we're kind of striving to build. It's just funny how clearly for us it's an execution issue. It's like I know that there is a big idea here. There's definitely, I think someone eventually will be the big nightlife app globally, and whoever makes it is going to make it huge, big. It's just a matter of execution, because people have tried to do this before and failed. A lot of people, YC, there have been YC-backed startups that try to do nightlife apps and failed. So I know it's a lot about execution. I've been able to, very interestingly enough, use some of my kind of consulting background to really understand why a lot of these other nightlife apps failed and what other apps in other verticals are doing well, and really learn from them. So it's like try and steal the kind of mechanisms that other apps do in other verticals when it comes to virality, when it comes to traction, and really learn from those and apply them to you and learn from the mistakes of others. It's been very interesting learning experience so far.
We're sitting here in the basement of the loft. Have you and your team been able to use the loft for any meetings or other kinds of things?
No, not so far, but I guess now that, because we had an office space, we were at a co-working space, then we were part of an accelerator program called Founder Space. We were there for a month, and after that program was done, we actually decided to basically save the cash in an office space, and just now we all work half the time, each of us from our own apartments, and half the time from my apartment. We just all meet in my apartment, but I think, yeah, the loft is definitely a good place to now start going to now that we don't really have a fixed office space. So.
Yeah, there's meeting space upstairs, there's plentiful food, there's Wi-Fi, events, there's our solution architects, all there for the local startup community. So
yeah,
please,
awesome.
Please do avail yourselves of that.
Definitely will.
I've really enjoyed speaking to you, and this has been really awesome. Wish you the best of luck and hope to hear nothing but great things in the future.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
This has been the AWS Podcast as part of the Intel Startup Spotlight. I'm Jeff Barr, and we're coming to you from the AWS Loft in San Francisco. Thanks for listening.